This is Cap and Company. Follow at the Capman on Twitter.
Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
All right. Thank you to our guest, Alex Brown. Charlie Romeliotis, Blackhawks insider, NBC Sports Chicago. Mark Spears, ESPN, who's inside the bubble in Orlando and provided us with his very unique perspective. Thank you, Danny Zetterman, Christopher Bleck. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. That leads us to the great Carmen DeFalco. The Carmen and Yurko Show. I believe Yurk is on vacation all week. It's all brought to you by Club Hawthorne. You want to bet the horses? It's America's original sports betting. ClubHawthorne.com or put in the Club Hawthorne app on the Google Play Store or on your iPhone at the Apple Store. Carm, how you doing, kid?
Good. Midway Jeff Meller's in the house today, too.
Yeah, Midway Jeff Meller for me there, Capper.
The spectacularly...
Thank you.
Talented Jeff Meller,
much
who is also, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, while I have the Bears at 11-5, Alex Brown says 11-5, 12-4, you have the Chicago Bears at 6-10. Is that right?
I've probably been close. I don't know if I've gone on the record with an actual record. I think it's much more likely that they're in store for a 5-11 type season.
Oh, God.
Because I don't trust Nick Foles, and I certainly don't trust Mitch Trubisky. And ultimately, when it's all said and done, that's, I think, where most people kind of... I love the defense, but I do think there's a chance that if they don't have a significant improvement offensively, that this thing could fall apart quickly. And I know I heard you, Cap.
11-5, Cap, seems. Man, I don't know. It's
Alex Brown said it could be 12-4.
That's just such a leap of faith with, knowing what they have and really what they don't have at the most important position, it's just a leap of faith. Like, I don't know how you get there. I mean,
he feels like, and I'm quoting him, he said, defensively, I feel like this team could be giving up an average of 14 points a game. That's how good he thinks.
Yeah, but
they
gave up about 17 last year, right? I mean, it's got nothing to do with the defense. Yeah, I agree with Alex and Jeff and for most people. Yeah, the defense. Knock on wood, nobody gets hurt. The defense should be terrific. But they gave up like seven. They were third in the league, I think, last year they allowed per game.
The problem is, too.
I don't know, man. Look, I mean.
We love defense. We're spoiled in this city. We have, the history of the 85 Bears, the greatest defense to ever suit up and play football. But the reality is that the way the NFL, the league is shaped now, even the best defenses in the league have a hard time combating offenses that's tailor made for offenses. Right now.
You've got to score. You just do in this league. If you've got to score, if everything goes right and Nick Foles can play a full season and be the good Nick Foles, then maybe they can win 10 or 11 games. And with an extra playoff team, maybe they sneak in even with 9. Let's say that's about as optimistic as I can be, though. Like 9 or 10, I just. It's hard to trust Nick Foles or Mitch Trubisky.
I have to ask you, Cap, though. I heard you really fired up about Bill Barnwell's ranking of the Bears as the 28th weaponry in the NFL. But the only thing is, he wasn't taking into account the offensive line and the quarterback. It was simply the wide receiver, the running back, and the tight end. And we all love Allen Robinson. No one has any issues with him. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the rest of the skill position players for the Bears, I look around the league, and I really can't argue with the teams that are above them.
It leaves a lot to be desired.
I'm not all in on the Vikings' offensive weapons. I'm not. I just look at the and go, okay.
I know, but Delvin Cook was spectacular last year. Now, I'll grant it, he may hold out. So if he's not there,
then it's
completely different story. But assuming Delvin Cook is running for them, and then you have, at the very least, Adam Thielen, who's on par with Allen Robinson, that right there, I don't know who else. Kyle Rudolph is still, a good weapon near the goal line. I know, the Vikings.
Justin Jefferson might be a stud,
this
too.
This is true, yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, they've got some skill there. They do.
Yeah, I think there is so much hate for the Chicago Bears that at times it colors people's opinions, and it's not just based on your skill position players. It's the roster 1 to 53, And I do look at that team, 1-53, and feel like this team has a real chance to be a really good football team.
But again, it comes down to what you get out of that most important position. And it's just hard to trust right now. That's all. I mean, could they pop another 12-4 season on us the way they did 2 years ago? Maybe. But there was still, you know, they were. It's easier to catch teams off guard in a season like that. You know, Nagy was for the most part, for all intents and purposes, a first-time play caller. You know, teams didn't really have a great knack for understanding all of his tendencies. You know, Mitch still had, I guess, a little bit of a surprise factor, and his athleticism kind of helped them win some games. I mean, like, you had a lot go right. Can they do that again? I don't know. It's just it's hard to get there for me. You know, knowing what we know about Nick Foles' career, knowing what we know about Mitch, it's just tough. I mean, I'd love to see it, but I'm thinking like 9 or 10, you're maxing out. But hey, even that I'll take, because you're probably a playoff team this year then with the extra team, you know? Mm-hmm. So like that 10, certainly. And the defense could be good enough to get him there.
10 should get you in.
Yeah, 9 might, right, guys?
Yeah,
because you got
generally,
an extra team.
Yes, generally, if you get 10 wins,
yeah, you're probably
in the 6-team playoff field. Yeah. If you move it to 7, 10 should almost be a slam dunk.
The Bears missed once with a 10-6 season under Lovey. Lovey's last year. You know, Belichick in Castle famously went 10-6, missed the playoffs. But, you know, I mean, that's probably going to get you. Like, I feel like 9 times out of 10, I would think, if you looked at the historical numbers, that's going to get you in. And now with an extra team, maybe 9 does, and the defense was still good enough to help him to 8 with the absolutely dreadful offense last year. So
Bears allowed 17.8 points per game last year.
Third, right?
Fourth.
Oh, fourth.
Second,
okay,
in the
sorry.
NFC. Okay. Fourth in the NFL at 17.8. They ranked 10th in the league in yards per game with 326.5, and they're 5.0 yards per play, 7th in the National Football
League. The counterpoint to that, and listen, I'm not completely, I don't want to say that the defense, I love what the defense has on paper. But don't forget, how many backup quarterbacks did they play last year? 5-6 quarterbacks. Remember, they got the Jeff Driskel-David Blough combo that the Lions threw at them.
They got a young Daniel Jones, remember?
Daniel Jones. Sean Mannion, was that the starter in Week 17 for the, am I remembering that correctly?
Is that the Vikings game?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it was in Week 17. Yeah. Like, I learned his name in Week 17, and I immediately forgot it. I think it's Sean Mannion.
I think you're right.
They had an opportunity to take advantage of some backup quarterbacks last year, and they certainly couldn't take advantage when they had Teddy Bridgewater, who put it on him. So, I mean, they had their fair share of opportunities last year, you know, in terms of schedule and backup quarterbacks. So that also played a role into having a good defense.
Yeah. A little bit. I still trust the D, though, mostly. I really do. I think they'll be good. I think Mac might even be. You know, Mac, I didn't probably have the kind of like Khalil Mack season you expect last year. A lot of that, I think, was the fact that Akeem Hicks was gone, and Leonard Floyd just could never really fire the way they needed him to fire. Quinn should help immensely. You know, like Mac will have a Mac-type year again, I think.
Alex Brown said to me yesterday, we were talking on the phone, he talked about it again today, where he thinks there is a chance. He goes, I'm not predicting a 20-sack season. But he goes, I'm just telling you, if you're going to double Akeem Hicks, which you have to do because he's the closest guy to the quarterback, and you're absolutely going to help on Khalil Mack, he said, you got a back or a tight end trying to block Robert Quinn? Good luck with that.
Exactly.
He'll kill you.
Yeah, I would
say. So he said he has a chance to have an amazing season if he stays healthy.
I would agree with that. He's had good years, even the last couple. I mean, and you put him on the opposite end of another great pass rusher. Yeah, I think there's still some good football left in Quinn. I would agree with that.
Like, I got to think that when Robert Quinn's sitting at home going, all right, I can go to Atlanta, I can go to Chicago, those are the final two. I've got Akeem Hicks up the middle. I got Eddie Goldman. I got Khalil Mack. Yeah, I'm in. I'll take that.
The only thing is he seems to be better, or at least I think he's publicly stated his preference is to play truly on the line with his hand in the dirt. Now, I wouldn't anticipate that happening very much now, right? I mean, because they play an odd man front. So, I mean, he's done it, but I think he has expressed a preference.
Yes.
But obviously, I guess you're right, Cap. I mean, he had a couple of choices, and he still chose. He knows what kind of defense they play, and he still chose to come here. So,
well, but you also wonder, too, ultimately, does it just come down to money? Like yeah. a guy,
the offers were identical.
Identical.
So
that's the third My Cousin Vinny reference that we've used on the show today.
You can never have too many My Cousin Vinny.
I was telling the story. I was talking to my neighbors. I said, they're like,
don't you have to leave to go to work? This was yesterday morning. I said, no, I'm doing the show from home because I was in California, one of 15 states. They're like, yeah. I go, we were in Wisconsin. They rented a lake house, and they were up there. And they said, we never left the house. We brought everything except, oh, we've got to get charcoal. And they went to Menards. And he said, I'm in Menards. And the guy says to him, what are you wearing a mask for?
Yeah, not as much.
And he said, are you people not aware of the ongoing COVID-19? Probably goes, COVID, is that a thing down in Chicago?
Oh, the guy's just busting balls.
No! He said literally no one in Menards was wearing a mask in Wisconsin.
I was also in Wisconsin, and there wasn't as much mask wearing. But when my wife did go to Walmart, she had her mask on and said there were still people wearing masks. I mean, not like you'd see here.
No.
Or it's required, I guess, but...
Crazy.
Yeah. By the way, Pete on Twitter says, and I appreciate it, Pete, he says, Carm, I got to correct you, New England went 11-5.
I thought that's what it was.
Thanks, Pete. They went 11-5 with Castle, and they're the only team ever, he said, they have 11 wins and missed the playoffs. Like, that's a true oddity.
Yes.
To go 11-5 and miss the playoffs.
Yeah, so you win 10, you usually feel good. And
even
again,
10,
with the seventh playoff team now in each conference, you would think 10 wins should get it done.
Yeah, I would think so, for sure. Yeah.
We'll see. But I'm just excited that this defense, hey, look, Ryan made a mistake on the Leonard Floyd. Give your credit. He called that the day of the draft. Please don't take that guy. And he was right because there were a lot. Ryan told me he got a text from Steve Spagnuolo that they Bears trade up from 11 to 9. The Giants are at 10. Chicago selects Leonard Floyd, linebacker, Georgia. He said, within 8 seconds on my phone, F you, from Steve Spagnuolo, because that's who they were taking.
Yeah.
They loved Leonard Floyd, and it just hasn't worked out.
Foxy liked him, too. I mean, right, Foxy really did.
He did.
Yurko did call that. Sometimes you've got to, you know, you're good enough to look at a body type and just say, eh, that ain't going to work. That's happened twice, and Yurko's been right. I'll never forget that. In training camp one year, after we had Gabe Kareemi came down as a live guest. And when we were done, Gabe Kareemi went walking back to the golf cart with someone from Bears PR. And as he's walking away, Yurko taps me on the leg and he said, kid, look at his legs. And I said, what? And he goes, they're like twigs. He's got no chance. And I mean, and he was right. I mean, Gabe Kareemi couldn't play.
And Gabe Kareemi was probably the only offensive lineman drafted from Wisconsin that has not worked out in the NFL.
It's like the only one. Dude. And Yurko called it right. He goes, look at his legs. They're twigs. He goes, he's got no chance.
Waddle walked into camp. Looked at, what's his name? Joaquin Iglesias.
Yeah, that's
he watched him run like two routes. He goes, no chance.
That's right. Those guys have pretty good eyes. Yurko tells the famous story about Tim Couch. And I think Yurko liked Tim Couch enough, but he said 2 days into training camp in 99, he goes, they all looked at each other and said, what? Like he said he turned to Chris Palmer and he calls him Chili. And he says, I thought you said he had a good arm. He's like, he can't throw the ball to the sideline.
That's
like, he's got no shot.
That's no good the Cleveland weather if your quarterback can't throw an out.
So those guys do have a pretty good idea usually. They can look at you pretty quick. He tells the same story about Mandrich up in Green Bay. And, you know, they can look at a guy a few days in and be like, not going to work.
But the amazing thing is, if Yurk has that ability, Tommy has that ability. I scouted in the NBA. It's amazing that guys will all get this herd mentality where, did you see the DeFalco kid? But yeah, he can't play. Yeah, you're right. And half of the time, they have no idea what they're talking about.
Sometimes it's like when you're really, I guess it comes down to like the biases that we all have.
It's confirmation bias.
That's what it is. And like when you're spending time studying and recruiting a guy, like these biases set in. But if you're a former pro athlete or a current athlete and you're in – all you're doing is, like, you're in the environment and the guy gets dropped in and you see him competing against other pros. Like, you might not have those same biases. You haven't invested as much in, like, the recruiting process, the analytics, the studying. Like, you're just reacting quickly to what you see. And I think guys like Waddle, Yurko, anybody that Mongo, they can pretty quickly look at a guy through a couple of practices and just say, he doesn't got it, or he does, you know?
And in any general manager's defense, though, you oftentimes don't have that opportunity. Sure, you can see a player, you can go to a scouting day and see a pro day, see a player against his college teammates, where they're not the same type of athletes that you have at the NFL level.
Right.
When you get into an NFL practice, you know, that's the luxury that all GMs don't have until you actually get the player out on the field of your roster, and you get to see what they can do against actual pros. Unfortunately, that's why so many players are busts in the NFL, in any draft.
In any draft. It's true. It really is.
Ask Jay, if you ever talk to Jason McLeod from the Cubs, he's wildly honest. He's a wonderful guy. He said, I'm at a showcase in the 2011 draft. He's the scouting director and VP of the San Diego Padres. He's working for Jed Hoyer, who's then the GM. He said, we go to this showcase, there's all these players playing, and I say to Tim Wilkin, who's picking 9, San Diego's picking 10. You can't trade picks in baseball. Right. So I can tell you who I'm taking. It doesn't matter. You can't trade in front of me. You want to go get a beer? Yeah, let's go get a beer. They go get a beer. He goes, so who are you taking at 9? And Tim said, if he's there, I'm taking a shortstop. He's like, kid, Lindor is going to be gone. He may not get to Cleveland, but if he does, Cleveland's taking Lindor. I know that for a fact at 8. He said, I'm not taking Lindor if he's on the board at 9. You're not? Who are you taking? Javi Baez. He goes, well, that guy's completely out of control. He said, we won't take him at 10. He'll tell you today. We would have left him on the board. And they take him in Chicago, and we know how it's turned out. Yeah. But that's a scout who had amazing ability to look down the road.
But can you imagine not taking – I mean, like, Baez is fun. I think, as a Sox fan, like, Baez is a fun player to watch. But Francisco Lindor blows Javi Baez out of the water. I mean, blows him out of the water. Lindor's a top 10.
I don't
think
blows him out of the water.
Lindor's a top 10 player in baseball. Yeah. So easily. Yeah, Javi Baez ain't close to the top 10. I mean.
No, he's probably what, top 25? Dude, he's been second.
Javi's problem, and Carmen and I are of the same mind here, and I think you are too, Cap. The fact that his inability to really lay off bad sliders at times, he gets hot. And then he can hit anything.
And he can carry you for like two weeks. But
over a prolonged season, Javier Baez, his plate discipline isn't at the elite level of your absolute, you know, top 5, top 10 hitters in baseball.
But that just goes to show you how hard it is. Like, and yeah, Baez has turned out to be very good for the Cubs. There's no doubt about it that he's an all-star and he's a very good player. But like, for one guy to be like, oh, I'm not taking Lindor, Baez is the guy. Like, Lindor, honestly, is, you know, you're talking about a top 10 player there in the game. So
has Lindor ever won an MVP?
No.
I think he finished second.
Let's see.
I don't know if he finished that high. But.
Let's see. He was second for Rookie of the Year. He was MVP 9, 5, 6, and 15th. Yeah. That's it.
But still, come on. We all know, Cap. I mean, Lindor is significantly better. Don't you think? I don't know. Maybe.
Yes.
I don't think it's as – I think it's closer than you think it is.
I don't know.
Lindor's a hell of a player.
Baez is still – the problem is that, you know, like Meller said, you know, he still has a few flaws that kind of preclude him from truly, to me, entering that upper echelon. That's all I'd say. Javi's career OPS plus is 106, so he's above your average player, but Lindor's is 120.
Over the last 3 years, you look what Lindor's done, 23, 24, 25 – that's how old he is in those seasons.
Yeah.
I mean, in comparison to Javi, who's 2 years older. And so, you know, Javi's in the midst of his prime, whereas Lindor's got a couple years left. And he's already kind of exceeded what Javi does with the bat.
Yeah.
But look, what Javi does in the field is spectacular.
It is spectacular.
That's hard to quantify, too, from some baseball
nerds. And the passion where he's like the face of your
fun.
Team.
Yeah, I mean, he's fun to watch. I'll give him that. He's such a good athlete. And I never thought we'd ever talk about the best tagger in MLB history, but Javi Baez is the best tagger that I've ever seen.
He's made it a thing.
It's insane.
He's like Peanut. He's made it a thing, like the Peanut Punch.
Merkin's about to blow out his rotator cuff. I got a break. You guys have a wonderful rest of your day. I'll be locked on listening.
Okay, see ya.
All right, Carm and Jeff Meller are coming up next. Have a wonderful rest of your day. Cap of Company rolls 9 a.m. tomorrow. Don't forget Waddle and Sylvia at 2. Hoodie at 6. See ya.
It's Carmen and Yurko.
Sports talk while you're on the clock.
Do I exaggerate?
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Welcome in on this Tuesday. It's Carmen and Yurko. Jeff Meller is sitting in for Yurk today. He is at Jeff_Meller on Twitter. Of course, audio man from the Waddle and Sylvie show. Nice to have you in here, buddy.
Pleasure to be had. It is a reunion. We've been reunited as the Commit to the Indian podcast just in time.
Remember how long ago that was? Was that like 2009 when all of a sudden they were hitting their stride?
It was before they won their first cup. Yeah. It might have been, it was definitely 2009. It might have been 2008, too. I remember. Yeah, I know definitely we were doing podcasts when they lost to the Wings.
Yes, which was 2009.
But I feel like the Taves Kane, when they made their debuts, that's when we kind of were like, you know, let's do a podcast.
Yep. When nobody was talking much hockey, but Miller and I loved it. So, yeah, we did the Commit to the Indian podcast way, way back in the day. We're here for you until Waddle and Sylvie. We've got a lot to do. Pete Dammel from Yahoo is going to join us coming up in about 6-7 minutes to talk about college football season that really is dangling by a thread at this point, let's face it. So we'll get into that with Pete. An hour from now, we're going to talk to our man Pat Boyle from NBC Sports Chicago about the Blackhawks. And there was big news yesterday when they returned to the ice. Corey Crawford, not on the ice, deemed unfit to play. And when you first hear that, you think, wow, that sounds terrible, especially considering Corey's history on and off the ice and concussions and things like that. But really, when you get into the rules that have been laid out by the NHL, maybe it's not that big a deal. I don't know what to make of it. I wish they would explain more because it would stop us and everybody else and all the fans from speculating all the time. But they don't want to tell anybody anything. Corey Crawford was not on the ice. He was ruled unfit to play. And the NHL is prohibiting teams from releasing medical information during Phase 3 in Phase 4. But it's so ambiguous. It's so nebulous. You have no idea what that really means and what is really going on and what should fans expect. It just leaves for a lot of conjecture.
Listen, and I have no problem if any athlete chooses to opt out because they don't want to play during this time. I have no problem with that whatsoever. But at the same time, too, you also, like, there's been plenty of players who have come out and said, hey, I've tested positive for COVID-19 and I'm, you know, whether I'm asymptomatic or it's everyone's individual choice. So that's perfectly fine. But you're right. It leaves us in this ambiguous spot where we're trying to figure out what's going on. And you're wondering, hey, is this a guy who's just choosing to opt out because he doesn't want to, at 35 years old, you know, put himself.
And then he's got a newborn. I believe Corey's got a newborn. So, like, we would all get that. I just wish they would
come to an agreement with the
PA. Deserve a little bit more.
I don't even care about us. It's just like for the players' purposes, like I don't think it's in their best interest that you have plenty of people wondering what's going on.
Yeah, because it just leads to too much speculation, I guess.
You're right. With Kopech,
doesn't matter what we're owed, but it would make it easier on these organizations, and it would stop all the rampant speculation that then happens.
I guess because like you in the back of your mind, you're wondering, well, he's unfit to play, so does this mean, and we'll hear from Jeremy Collison, Sam Bowman. Here, I'll let you let them play.
Here's Bowman explaining, basically. They just can't share details, and they can't even give you a timeline on Corey Crawford right now.
You know, the way we are handling this is, you know, we're looking at the guys that are here and ready to play. And when Corey's in that group, then we can talk about Corey. But, you know, the focus today was to get ourselves back going, and we've got four goaltenders here, and you know, the goal is to be prepared when the time is right. We've got some time, certainly. You know, our first game isn't for several weeks here. So, you know, that's a tough one to speculate on.
And here's the coach, Jeremy Colleton, on the goalie situation without Corey Crawford.
Today, Corey's unfit to play or to participate. So it's an opportunity for those other guys to compete. We'll probably rotate those three guys, Subban, Delia, and Lankinen, and we'll rotate them through the first group. It's a great opportunity for them and a great opportunity for us to evaluate them. And we expect a lot of competition, and we have confidence in all three of those guys that they're going to make it hard on us and play at a high level.
From a competitive standpoint, the reason this is significant is because if anybody feels like the Hawks have a shot at this, and we're all Hawks fans, right? I mean, if you beat Edmonton in a short series and you eliminate, that offensive team from the Western Conference playoffs, hey, maybe anything's possible. It's only possible with Corey Crawford.
Exactly.
You can absolutely forget about it without him.
Malcolm Subban does not in any way give me confidence like he does Culleton there.
No.
Delia, even though he had a nice little stretch run, five, six games last season, I can't envision him turning into the old proverbial goaltender standing on head against the Edmonton Oilers right now. And so, yeah, if Corey Crawford's not in net, it goes from optimism to, okay, 12.5% isn't terrible.
one out of eight, 12.5%. And Crow was playing great going into the break, too. Yeah. That was the thing. I mean, if you know,
I don't know what that means, though, when nobody has had an opportunity to really stay in shape and get ice time. I don't know who being hot, if that means anything going into this. We'll find out.
Who knows?
That's about it, though.
Pat Boyle's going to join us in an hour with more from Hawks camp as they are firing things back up on the West Side, getting ready for the resumption of play in the NHL season. We got a lot to talk about. We got an interesting baseball angle for you in about 30 minutes or so. We'll start getting into that. There's actually a web poll up on my Twitter timeline. You can vote on that now, and then we'll dive into it in about 30 minutes. At Carmen DeFalco, how would you feel if MLB players started sitting out after accruing key service time this season? The options are wouldn't bother me at all, annoyed but understanding, and mad as hell. Annoyed but understanding leads the web poll right now, 47.7%. And then it wouldn't bother me at all runs second with 31.8%. So if you're mad as hell, you're in the minority. Just one out of five, 20.5% say they'd be mad as hell. And we'll dive deep into that in about the next 30. Pete Thamel, who's a great college football and basketball writer for Yahoo, is going to join us coming up next to talk about a college football season that truly seems like it is teetering on the brink. We'll be right back.
Stream ESPN 1000 anytime through the ESPN Chicago app.
You're listening to Carmen and Yurko. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Yurk's off this week. He will be back next week. Jeff Meller sitting in for the good kid today. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at Carmen DeFalco. Jeff is at Jeff_Meller. Remember, we're on Twitch, so you can see us in our first Midwest Bank studios. What up, Twitchers? Twitch.tv. Search ESPN 1000 Chicago. So the one season that really seems like it is in jeopardy, and who knows, maybe none of these get finished, but I feel more optimistic about the pro season, the college football season. I don't feel good about that one.
It's funny. I'm of two minds because whenever we say college football, you know, I hear people talk about it's the second major sport after professional football, and I agree with that assessment, but then I also think, wait a minute. They're supposed to be amateurs.
And they're not amateurs.
And so, of course they're not because of the lucrative television deals that every college football conference has. And still, though, there is an aspect of amateurism that is going to have a huge wrench in whether or not this actually gets done.
Like it could derail it. Pete Thamel's a great college football and basketball writer for Yahoo. He joins the program now on the Corona Hotline. Pete, how are you?
Great, guys. How are you today? Thanks
We're
for having
okay.
me.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. And your latest article paints, and a lot of your colleagues, I feel like, that cover this sport have penned sort of similar pieces recently where it just kind of paints a grim picture. I mean, from everybody you talk to, and you're plugged in. I mean, like, is there any optimism out there brewing at all that they can successfully pull off some sort of a college football season?
Not particularly. And here's the best. I probably talked to a dozen coaches and ADs Sunday, Monday before I wrote my latest column on Yahoo about the dim chances of the season. And like the best point somebody made was like, give me a path to play. Like, what is the path to play? Like, give me like a clear vision of how we can do this. And quite frankly, those visions just don't exist right now. I don't see an easy way. You can get 13,000 guys on 130 campuses, all living in dorms, apartments, etc. The opposite of a bubble, right?
Yeah, right.
They're all basically living in cruise ships, right? Dorms, college apartments, they're all cruise ships. They just don't go port to port. They stay put. And you're going to tell me all of these guys with limited testing, etc., are going to be able to go play a contact sport 5 or 6 days a week and not continue to spread the virus when it's spreading at that rate that it is in that age group right now.
Pete,
I don't see a path.
Yeah.
No, I think that's a fair point, Pete. But I'll, you know, and I think you laid it out well in your article where you say, here's the cruel truth about how college football leaders approach the football this fall. The entirety of their plan to return was based on hope. Ultimately, you have a quote in there, ultimately no one is playing football at all, and that a strategy of hope isn't much of a strategy. I would agree completely, but at the same time, I do wonder, you know, when as a country everything is up in chaos, could you have even put together a plan that would have been a path forward.
Yeah, that's fair. If, you know, I criticize them for a strategy of hope because there was belief, legitimate belief. I mean, there's kids on campus right now. There's practice plans. There's workout X amount this week, workout X amount that week. Like, there was no plan, but yet a lot of strategy of how to do it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, there was oversight committees met, et cetera, and came up with all this practice stuff. But they just basically completely ignored the virus piece of this. And I don't really believe we're going to have major college sports again until there's a vaccine. Nobody has certainly convinced me otherwise at this point.
Right. Pete Thamel from Yahoo's our guest. Carmen and Yurko. Jeff Miller's in for Yurk this week on ESPN 1000. What are the chances they play a season in the spring?
I do think there is a chance for that. But it is a last resort. You know, a TV executive told me Monday morning, you know, looking at how things could unfold, the strategy is going to be push back. So July 31st or whatever, we'll hear from the SEC, the Big 12, and the ACC. And their strategy is likely to be some sort of maybe conference only, maybe not, but let's just push back and wait. So inevitably that push back and wait could go to the spring. There are some concerns amongst coaches that I've talked to about playing two seasons in 1 year. You know, can the shoulders and knees, et cetera, handle it? And there's also no guarantees that come February 1st, we're going to have a widely available vaccine. The one difference in the spring that gives me at least some hope is that there should be better testing. And if you have rapid testing where you can test every person who goes into your facility every day and keep that bubbled and then in theory prevent the spread because you'll know everyone in the bubble doesn't have a virus, then maybe you can execute a season. But there's still tons of other variables that, you know, that need to be considered.
Well, you just run into a real logistical nightmare with the way the NFL has its calendar structure too, don't you, Pete? That you try to play in the spring and Trevor Lawrence ain't playing football in February and March in college, yeah. Right? There's just no way.
Well, Trevor Lawrence is a foregone conclusion. Yeah. It's the left guard who has a fifth ground grade who's also not going to play. So you're talking a dozen plus players, you know, just a significant roster loss from Clemson, Ohio State, Alabama, you know, like Oregon, places like that. Like, you know, if you have an NFL future, you are, you know, there's not a ton, or you'll have guys play three games, get some good film and bounce. That kind of a thing. So no, there are no easy answers here. And I think that the reality is we go forward, and I don't even think I'm like the doom and gloom guy. Like, I don't think baseball has a great chance of pulling this off. And the thing that surprised me most this weekend, and I called some NFL people too, is the NFL. There's not a whole lot of optimism in the NFL of how they're going to figure this out either. Like, the NFL, God bless basketball, they have a plan, right? It's a $150 million bubble where if you cross a line like Rashawn Holmes did last night, you end up, you know, you end up significantly compromised. And what a great guy to make an example out of, Rashawn Holmes. Like the single most anonymous NBA player, right? But like, give Adam Silver credit. From the moment this, you know, became a thing in March, he feverishly developed a plan, right? And it's a plan that has a chance to work, but it's not guaranteed to work. But there's $150 million invested in it. And a whole lot of thought to, you know, basically creating a bunker where guys, you know, where guys can play. There is nothing like that in the NFL, not even close. And there's really nothing like that in Major League Baseball, which is why you're just sort of seeing that model fall apart. The MLS is struggling right now. Like, I want sports back as much as anyone. My livelihood is based on it, much like yours guys is. But I am not a paragon of optimism right now, just because the realities of this virus are cruel.
One of the optimistic points in your article, Pete, was that one AD, I think it was an AD, but someone said that at least in 13 months, they're optimistic that you can get back to some type of normalcy. But I guess when I read that, I said, sure, for college football. But what is the impact on the rest of collegiate sports? Because we know that a lot of the economy is fueled by college football money.
Oh, I mean, it's 85% of the finances of college athletics is college football. So, I mean, you know, I knew the tenor was changing about a season when the ADs that I was calling a few weeks ago had kind of shifted from, like, how do we get our players back and tests and all that to, like, oh, my God, how do I find $50 million to, like, you know, keep our budget afloat? And those are real conversations. Leagues are exploring maybe, like, economic bailout models where – like if you have 10 years left on your TV deal for $1 billion to use a round number, you can borrow against the remaining billion and then pay it back over a period of time, like that kind of thing. Basically, like, you know, they're going to take out shark loans.
Before we let you go, Pete, just more on that, specifically for college football programs, I guess. Like, maybe I'm asking you to pick an arbitrary number here. I don't know. Or maybe you've kind of done some of this research and gathered up some info. Like, what's a percentage, if you can come up with one, that college football programs would just have to fold if they couldn't play a season in 2019?
I don't think any college football programs would fold.
Okay.
I think that's a pinch back. Now, look, actual universities are going to be folding from this, and athletic departments are going to be cutting sports because of this. I mean, you saw Stanford cut 11 of them, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
But actual football, I mean, you don't cut the thing that makes the money, right?
Yeah. If they can get back to it, that's the thing that drives the engine. You're right. Pete, great stuff. Good article. We appreciate the time. Be well.
Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. That's Pete Thamel from Yahoo. Pete Thamel on Twitter. So make sure you follow him. And like I said, it's not just Pete. It's a lot of the guys that are in this that talk to ADs and coaches and agents. And Ben Standig from The Athletic wrote a similar article over the weekend that it is just – it's a grim, bleak outlook right now for college football more than anything else. And we all do love college football. Like you said, Jeff, it's pretty much the second major sport, isn't it?
Yeah.
Behind the NFL. So.
And certainly you can, you know, maybe some like look, in Illinois, we're not in a terrible spot. We're actually in a pretty good spot when you look at it in comparison to the rest of the nation. But the reality is, too, that we can't just isolate and play college football games in Illinois.
Right.
Like, you're dependent on the entire country,
right,
you know, getting their arms around this thing. Because if two or three or four programs have to shut down, that makes it inevitable that the conference is unlikely to be able to. You can't just, okay, well, that game's canceled. Yeah. Let's move forward. Like, if that were the case, that's not representative of any type of real college football season.
Right. When we come back next, we'll do a little trending. We'll tell you what's hot on social media. And there's news from the NFL. One franchise player has signed. Another will probably not. We will bring you up to speed coming up next. The Noon Hour is brought to you by the Home Loan Expert. The Home Loan Expert has been in the mortgage industry for 17 years and have never seen interest rates this low. How much money can they save you? Find out, but you got to visit thehomeloanexpert.com.
This is Carmen and Yurko. Follow us on the gram at Carmen and Yurko and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
It's Carmen and Yurko. Jeff Miller's in for Yurk. Good kids on vacation this week. He'll be back next week. We've got NFL news. Looks like the Chiefs, after securing Patrick Mahomes of that long 10-year deal, have gotten another one of their top priorities locked up. Boy, they're pretty much bringing back that entire team that won the Super Bowl last year. Chris Jones is back with a 4-year deal.
Why wouldn't you if you could?
Yeah, I know. Absolutely.
And then
they're going to be dangerous.
They've added Clyde Edwards-Helaire to the backfield, which should make them more explosive.
That's the only time I'm going to tell you that it's a good idea to draft a running back in the first round, if you do what Andy Reid did. And I say that because they use the last pick.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does, which is a ridiculous thing that these players allowed the owners to put in, I don't get it, but it is what it is. I mean, if you're a franchise, you take advantage of it. The first round picks have the fifth year option.
Yep.
And that is the only time I'm going to say it's okay to draft running backs in round one. Like, if you're picking 30, 31, or 32, because you're stealing another year.
I would say based on need. Look, if you're in the back half, like, not even back half, but let's say the final third. So maybe the final quarter of the draft. So 24, you're obviously a playoff team because you're picking in that spot. And if you have a key need at the running back position and there is a player that you find above most in the draft, I'm okay with it. But I agree. Like, anything above that, and you better feel confident. You have no holes whatsoever, because gone is the day and age where you go ahead and, you know, select a running back first, second, or in the top five, top 10. It's just it ends up not resulting in good things for your franchise. Again, in a lot of ways, I was talking about, like, when you build your defense up to be great, that's fine. But in this NFL, everything's tailor-made for the offense.
Yeah.
More specifically, everything's tailor-made for a passing offense.
Everything.
You know what I mean? You exploit the ability of a quarterback to be able to complete 70% of their passes. And because of that, the running back, the value of the running back is not what it once was.
No, it's gone down dramatically in the last decade or so. It's just not a valued position as much anymore. Teams have become wise. I mean, yeah, you get your exceptions with Zeke and Saquon, but really teams have become wise to not drafting them very often in the first round. I mean, go back and look at the history of the draft in the last 10 years and compare that to, you know, years 1970 to even 2005, say, where first-round running backs were very common. You'd have five or six. You'd be lucky if you get two or three now in the first round. We've had some years in the last 10 where you have zero running backs drafted in the first round. It just doesn't make sense. Derrick Henry is not going to get the extension he wants. He's going to play under the franchise tag. Tomorrow's the deadline, and the reports are that he's not going to sign. And I just wouldn't do it, and it's nothing against Derrick Henry. How'd it work out for the Rams with Todd Gurley? How's it work for the Falcons, who now took Todd Gurley with Devonta Freeman? Devonta Freeman 2 years ago was the highest-paid running back in the NFL. He can't find work. No, he'll get a job when teams go to camp and players get hurt, but Devonta Freeman can't find a job right now.
This is interesting because yeah, well, the Todd Gurley contract was inexcusable.
Terrible.
With the history of the arthritic knee, it made no sense. I know he was just a monster, you know, scoring 17, 18, 19 touchdowns for consecutive years, but the offense was humming, and you see, you can plug in, you know, he may not be 100% of what Gurley gives you, but you can plug in lots of guys, and they can be productive running backs if you have a good play caller like Sean McVay. Conversely, though, the Titans really did lean on Derrick Henry in an old school type of running game, and I think,
still wouldn't pay him.
But that's the point, is because even still, what's going to happen with Derrick Henry? You're going to use and abuse him, and what happens is the war of attrition for running backs is not kind.
No.
He'll be used up, and then when he finally does, if you did offer him a lucrative contract extension that he was willing to accept, Carm, chances are you'd find yourself in a situation where you're like, oh yeah, remember, he was great when we signed him to that long-term deal, and now that it's kicking in, we've used him for 400-plus touches a year, and he's no longer the player that he once was. I mean, the NFL history is littered with great players who were used and abused. Remember Larry Johnson for the Kansas City Chiefs?
Especially at that position. You're
exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Yes. If you're really good, and you're somebody who can wear a defense down like Derrick Henry, and you can garner, you can say, all right, it's in our best interest as the offense to rely on him and give him whatever it is, 400 touches in a season. All that's going to happen in all likelihood is that 3 years removed, he's not going to be anything close to the player he once was.
Yeah, the Walter Paytons of the world were rare. I mean, it's like you said, the war of attrition is harder on them than probably almost any position in the league. It is just not smart business anymore to pay running backs in the NFL. It just isn't. You find them everywhere.
It's too bad for running backs because, like, I remember Le'Veon Bell saying that they should start their own union, their own position union. And it's not outrageous when you think about it. Like,
They need to
because they need to be paid the first 5 years of their career when they're under their rookie deals, unfortunately.
Right.
It's just, and look, no one's going to cry for a guy who is going to, you know, what's the franchise? Is it $12 million for Henry?
10 point, I think it's,
so
it's 10.27.
And that goes to show, it's gone down.
Oh, considerably.
It's the only position that the franchise tag number has gone down.
That's all you need to know. And that's based on what the league average is of the top 10 guys. That's where they come up with that number. So that's all you need to know about how the league itself values the position. It is just not smart business anymore to invest heavily in running backs, whether that's high in the first round of the draft or paying them after their rookie deals. And it sucks to say that for these guys. It's their livelihood, but it's just reality. When you're dealing with the salary cap and all the other free agent issues that you might have or the things that you have to take care of on your roster, it just doesn't make sense anymore. Let's do a quick trending. Merck, what is happening in the world of social media?
Hey, guys, how we doing?
What's up, buddy?
Good to have you here today, Jeff.
Ah, pleasure to be here, Merck.
What's trending brought to you by Trend Micro, the leader in cybersecurity, protecting over 500,000 companies worldwide. Visit trendmicro.com/ESPN for more info. So, before we get to nuts and bolts sports, did you guys see that the head of or the host of Dancing with the Stars? I'm totally drawing a blank on his name now. Tom.
Aaron, I know who it is, but I don't know his name.
They were both.
I can picture.
They were both fired. I'm just totally drawing a blank on his.
They were fired.
They were both fired.
Are they doing a Dancing with the Stars this year? Could they possibly?
I don't know. I know. But hold on. This is totally. I just had it right here.
You know his name. It's Tom Flynn.
Well, yeah. Tom.
That guy, Tom.
Tommy.
Tom Bergeron.
Yeah,
Tom Bergeron.
Yeah,
Aaron
right.
Andrews.
Tom
Bergeron has basically been with the show since it started.
Yeah, right.
He is gone. Aaron Andrews is also gone. Now, he wasn't happy last year, and he made it known when Sean Spicer was chosen as one of the contestants.
Oh,
and I don't know if Yeah, I don't know if that's something to do with it, but I mean, he's great. I love Tom Bergeron. He's a great host. Aaron Andrews, fine, but
love Aaron Andrews, big fan.
Yeah, but yeah, they're both gone.
All right.
So there you go.
I'll throw your name in, into the ring there.
I would actually do
hire Ryan Seacrest.
Go ahead, Jeff. Since we're doing some trending, Darren Revell just tweeted that the Patriots have announced that they plan on having games with 20% fan capacity and that tickets will be arranged in blocks of 10 seats or fewer.
20%. So what's that for them? About 15,000 seats, probably? 14,000 seats? Does that sound
a little
right?
Bigger, but yeah, in that ballpark.
Give or take.
15,000 to 20,000
fans.
All right. Just real quickly, Field Yates tweeted this out when you guys had just been talking about running backs 5 hours ago. The free agent running back class for 2021 is currently loaded. Here's who's available. Derrick Henry, Dalvin Cook, Alvin Kamara, Aaron Jones, Joe Mixon, Kenyon Drake, Todd Gurley, Leonard Fournette, James Conner, Matt Breida, Philip Lindsay, Kareem Hunt, James White, Tariq Cohen, Marlon Mack,
I'd find the one that I could pay like $3 million a year and run with him. That's what
I mean, supply and demand is not going to be working in their favor,
no,
the running back.
Certainly is not next year.
I don't know if you mentioned this, but the Eagles have re-signed Jason Peters.
Yeah, they're going to have him play guard.
Yep.
Yeah, they made that well known. He's not a tackle. He's going to be guard.
That's right.
And, guys, a little personal note. One year ago, anniversary, Deerfield Warriors 12U Red won their first tournament.
Wonderful.
And the season.
Good anniversary.
Yes.
I love it.
Yes.
Speaking of baseball, when we come back next, we're going to discuss the players potentially giving the owners in the front offices a taste of their own medicine in this crazy, wild, truncated 60-game season. We'll discuss that coming up next. We'll be back in 2 minutes.